Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Wednesday afternoon. That means Terry Savage is in the studio. A little bit later, we'll talk to Allison Robinson. She is the CEO and co-founder of the Mom Project, which takes moms who might have been out of the workplace a little.
I think I referred you to her.
Did
to you? Yes,
oh,
I did.
Nice.
Yeah, I find such interesting, great you business
do.
Stories in Chicago.
You book half the show, and I just appreciate that so much.
Terry's
here. So the idea is they take moms, women mm-hmm. who are out of the workplace or trying to get back in. They'd left for to raise their kids or whatever, and place them sometimes temporarily, sometimes permanently.
I think it's a terrific idea. You know, first of all, we're getting close to what, in quotes, I say full employment, not for a lot of people.
Right, right.
But, you know, the unemployment numbers are down on average. And one great untapped resource is people who may have been out of the workforce for a few years and have a lot to contribute.
Well, and we talk about the Uber workforce, right, the independent contractors and things like that, and that seems to be a little bit what this might be.
This shows that we are now a much more transparent economy. We're willing to look at people for talent, and there's less competition for jobs and more competition to find qualified employees with a work ethic. You may not have the technology edge that your younger compatriots have, but you have a lot to contribute.
Start with the person and build from there.
Yes.
Let's go to the Fed. Meeting again. And, you know, we talk about the Fed all the time, and it seems like there's...
They meet every month,
right, more
or less.
Right, but it seems like often not much happens, and that's probably what's going to be today, right?
Yeah, well, the problem is there's not much happening at the Fed because there's not much more that they can do. Central banks around the world are cutting interest rates to get their economies going. How do they really do that? Whether it's the European Central Bank or the Japanese Central Bank, they go out in the open marketplace and they buy bonds. And they pay for the bonds, whether they're government bonds in most cases, but now in Europe and even in Japan, they're buying other debt securities. And when they pay the sellers, the banks or the institutions or the people that are holding these bonds, they pay with newly created money, injecting credit into the banking system. So they've been doing this now for a year and a half, and here's an astounding statistic. One-third of the developed world, that's Europe and China's considered developed world now, mm-hmm. Japan, one-third of the debt from the developed world yields less than 0%.
Explain that for me.
Negative
interest rate. In a way that I can understand it.
The point is that when they go out and buy these bonds and put the money into the system, it pushes interest rates down. That's their intent, so that people will start spending the money because instead of leaving it in the bank.
Right.
Because, okay, so let's take it right here. In Japan, the people have decided instead of spending the money because the Japanese economy is going nowhere. All these savers, the government's bought up almost all the government bonds the central bank has, putting money into the economy. You actually have to pay the bank to leave money in the bank. So instead, they're taking cash, literally taking cash and putting it under the mattress in Japan. That doesn't help their economy. That doesn't get money lent out at low rates. That doesn't get their economy stimulated. It shrinks it further.
So you say we have a savings account at the bank. We're getting almost no interest
rate.
Well,
all of us who have savings accounts now are getting almost nothing. But how would you like to be paying the bank negative rates?
So I want to walk through that. So I go up to the bank and I show them my passbook account.
Yeah, right. Remember those?
And, you know, they're holding $500 for me. Are they going to say, well, Steve, to hold that in those
yes.
countries, to hold that $500, we're going to charge you $2.
Exactly. So now you only have $498.
And that's happening in a third of the developed world.
Well, it's a third of the bonds that are outstanding now have negative interest rates. And so when that happens, all kinds of rates in every country, people are paying the bank to hold their money. And the banks are not lending it out and making a profit. And instead, by the way of leaving it there and paying a bank, people are taking their money out in cash. So that means the economy slows further. Banks are scared to lend around the world. They have new capital requirements. They have new risk requirements. Banks aren't lending. Businesses aren't borrowing because they don't feel confident that economies are growing. Look at our first quarter GDP will be next to nothing.
Right.
And same thing around the world. China is probably doing a little bit better. But every country around the world now is creating money in a vain attempt to stimulate growth. Now, the historic result of creating money, printing money, to devalue your currency is that people don't want to hold the currency. When they get tired of holding paper, what are they going to turn to? I'm not being a maniac about this, but gold is now $1,250 an ounce. And I think we will look back at some point and remember that gold was around $1,100, $1,200 an ounce for most of this year, down from $1,900 at its highs.
But I want to talk about gold coming up after the break. But before we do that, back to the Fed, there was a piece I was reading today about the Fed in election years and whether there might be pressure. Because if they raise the rates, right, that will likely have a negative impact on Wall Street.
The Fed cannot raise rates, at least for a while. They keep huffing and puffing to blow your house down and raise interest rates. But the fact is, all the money that's sloshing around the world would come to the U.S. if they raise rates a little bit. That's not what the Fed wants.
So the politics are not an option. They couldn't really do it anyway.
The Fed has been so powerless in the face of basic economics that they can't even think about politics now.
So no rate increase today. No rate increase before the election.
The futures markets are telling you that unless something dramatically changes in the world, you're not going to see rate increases till the fall. Then in the fall, you're right, they will be constrained from doing it in the months leading up to the election. Now, you cannot say for sure they're not going to raise rates. Things could change economically, but it's hard to figure out how the Fed can raise rates with a slow economy.
Terry Savage has been talking about gold for a few weeks, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that after we take a break here on the Business Lunch. It is 12:18. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is in the studio. You can, you should follow her and read her columns at terrysavage.com.
And in the Tribune on Mondays.
Channel 9, right? Don't you
Channel 9? Yeah, Channel 9 and in the morning show. And Tribune syndicates my column now all over the country. So people post questions on my blog at terrysavage.com, and I read you in the Florida this or the Denver Post or whatever.
But you've been talking about gold and the fact that it might be time for gold for a while.
Yeah, this is not a recommendation to go out and buy gold, but people get to be maniacs about gold. Gold is a commodity, and like any other commodity, it has its ups and downs. But I posted a column at terrysavage.com a couple of days ago to beware of fool's gold, because I think what's happening is now there's a little bit more attention to gold. It's held above $1,200 an ounce now for a while. I want to make clear to point out its highs were $1,900, and so you could have lost a lot of money in gold. And there are lots of ways to buy gold, gold stocks, mutual funds that buy gold stocks.
So should we look for Chinese gold?
You know, gold is gold. That's the one thing. It doesn't have a nation of origin. However, a lot of people buy gold coins, gold bullion coins. And it was pointed out to me by one of the most reputable coin dealers that there are a bunch of scams going on. And so if people are going to start paying attention to gold, and people give gold coins for graduations, it's that season, I wrote a thing, beware of fool's gold.
Now, one of the things you did write about, though, is that a lot of these scams are coming out of China, right? And some of it has to do with packaging?
Well, the most interesting thing is, I remember back in the 80s that there was a warehouse full of gold bars, and when someone finally got in there and scratched it off, it was lead bars painted with gold. Okay, that was the old-fashioned thing. Right now, they're seeing a rise in counterfeit fake coins that are made of copper or nickel, zinc, covered with a thin gold or even silver, in case of silver coins, silver coating, mostly gold because those are the more expensive coins. Now, if you're sophisticated, you know that the size of the coin dealers could spot them like that. But unsophisticated people not buying from reputable dealers don't realize the weight is a little off because it's not gold, mm-hmm. So they've compensated by the size and so forth. You can't just weigh it and tell. You want to be very careful only to buy coins from a reputable precious metals dealer. This column is up at terrysavage.com. There are two websites you can search. This is an easy one to remember, is money.org. That's the American Numismatic Association's website. You could search for a dealer in Chicago. I'm going to log this as a commercial, but I always go to Harlan J. Burke on Clark Street. They are...
Well, if you recommend them, that works for me.
Burke, B-E-R-K, Harlan J. Burke. But they're all around the country. It's not just for when you're buying gold coins, by the way. It's for when you're selling gold coins. You don't want to get ripped off on the weight or on the fact that you might have a more rare coin, if not just a bullion coin.
How do you, can you use gold coins for an IRA for your retirement?
This is a really interesting question. This is part of the article, too. You can buy precious metals if you have an independent trustee. And I've written columns about that. There are trust companies that are set up to hold hard assets, the allowable hard assets, which are certain bullion coins, in particular the U.S. Coins. However, there are some companies out there now, and I'm working on another column on this, that are saying you can set up a little company and be your own trustee and take those coins and keep them at home. And I'm telling you that the IRS and the Treasury Department have not ruled on that yet. So if you're going to buy gold coins, make sure you've got the coins that are allowed in an IRA and make sure you have an independent trustee that acts as custodian.
So someone's got to hold the coins.
Someone has to hold the coins.
And you've also said in that column, you've warned against some of these outfits that say, we'll hold the coins for you. So there's...
Well, yeah, you need an independent trustee, and you can search for those. I probably overdue on another column. I've written about those before. And that's not a bad idea to put in your IRA, some portion of gold. Or you can just, if you want to do that, you can buy a gold mutual fund. There are half a dozen of them out there.
You don't have to hold the gold.
Gold is like a little bit of an insurance policy. I want to tell you, Steve, that if we ever get to some of these outrageous predictions of gold at $4,000 or $5,000 an ounce, it's going to signal such an economic and social breakdown that we really don't want to see that. But you can make money buying and selling gold coins, and you can also earn dividends on some of the gold mining companies.
Terry Savage. You can read more at terrysavage.com. You know, I joked at the beginning of the year that I didn't want you to come back into the studio until the Dow recovered.
Well, I'm here.
And it worked.
I'm here.
We're right at 18,000. Nice to see you. We'll see you again soon.
Okay.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
My next guest played with several bands before breaking out his own. His new CD, Pain is a Megaphone, is out now. Please welcome the fantastically talented Steve Bertrand, everybody. Steve.
It's 12:36. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Oh, I look back fondly on that night I was on The Late Show with Craig Ferguson, and he called out my name. Wait a minute. That wasn't me. That was this Steve Bertrand. Hey, other Steve Bertrand, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, good day. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. Finally, good to meet you.
It is good to meet you as well. I feel a little bit like Patty Duke, but that's okay. You know, I came across you first maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7, 8 years ago when I wanted to register SteveBertrand.com as my domain name. And lo and behold, you had already had it. And then I start reading about your success with the Tories and all of that. Tell me about you growing up in Vermont and heading to California with a guitar on your back to make it as a musician.
Wow. Yeah, kind of a unique story. Grew up, you know, no internet, no cable TV, you know, hunting, fishing, doing all that. Music, went to the Beach Boys concert, Shoulders when I was a kid. It was like a lightning bolt hit me, and made my way to Los Angeles with $500 and a guitar, and moved into a sleazy motel on Sunset Boulevard and sort of started my musical journey, if you will.
Yeah, and you had some success pretty quickly, didn't you?
Well, quick is relative. I mean, yeah, I kind of kicked around years, and you know, I kind of struck gold. Was discovered by a pretty famous record producer named Phil Ramone, and that was sort of a life-changing experience. And next thing I know, we're signing record deals, and we're in, you know, at Compass Point in the Bahamas, making our first album and touring around the world on MTV. And yeah, it was kind of a crazy journey.
Well, I'm interested in talking to you for a couple of reasons, obviously, because we share the same name. By the way, there's a guy who runs a library about an hour from here, Steve, who's also named Steve Bertrand. So we should have had him on the show as well.
Goodness gracious. Well, there may need to be a fist fight or something over who actually owns the rights to the name.
No, you'd win. If it's between a librarian, me, and you, I'm going to give it to you. You hands down. No, but so I'm interested in you because so many people that we know go west to make it, and then there comes a point where they've made it or they haven't, and it's time to transition into something else. You went out, you had great success, but the road got a little long, the family got a little bigger, and you decided it was time to transition, right?
Yeah, five record deals later, a couple million dollars in advance and touring the world. You know, I wasn't getting any younger and just kind of fell into the world of film and TV with a show that I did with Christina Applegate called Jesse. That was on NBC for a couple seasons. Won some awards and ended up doing another show with Selma Blair. And that was sort of the natural progression for me. I got married and wanted to stay home, started having kids, and the idea of touring was not so appealing. And so I initially thought, well, I'll just be a side guy, and ended up doing that for a little bit. I was on The Voice. I was in the house band on The Voice for season one.
I don't watch those shows very much. Which one is The Voice?
It's one of those competition shows on NBC where they stick a person in front of a camera and make them sing, and they try to make them famous after a few weeks.
And so you were playing in the house band there.
Yeah, I was. It's kind of American Idol-ish.
Yeah, you didn't like it, did you?
It wasn't that I didn't like it. It just wasn't the right fit for me. I was gone 80 hours a week, missed so much of my daughter's first year of life, and I might as well have been in Japan or something, because I was just working so much and really wanted to kind of carve my own path. And so the film and TV thing really made the most sense for me. And so that's when I really dove headlong into that aspect of my my career.
And so what are you doing now?
Well, I do three things. I compose television shows. So I do the music for TV shows. I also mix television shows. I do the 5.1 surround sound mix. I put them all together for broadcast. And I also narrate a show. I started getting into narration. I do a show for Great American Country. It's actually, I guess it's the number one show on the network, called Flippin' RV.
I was watching a little bit of that and getting ready to talk to you. And it's a couple, they go out, like, it's like flipping houses, right? But in this case, they're like vintage RVs or any kind of RV.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they're up in, I believe it's in Bend, Oregon, and so they just restore these old, you know, Airstream trailers and make them incredible. It's a whole culture I didn't even know existed, but yeah, it's a very big, a big market, I guess.
Well, your website, as I've stated, and I still want to take over, is stevebertrand.com, so people can find out more information there. But how do you solicit business when it comes to are we talking about composing television themes or music, scores, or what is it that you would most like to do, and how do you get that business to come to you?
Well, it's a strange thing. I haven't had a manager or an agent for like 10 years or so. It's I've been in Los Angeles for a while, so it's kind of been a word of mouth thing. And my brothers always marvel. They're like, "Wait, how do you stay alive again? What do you do?" People call and I respond. And so I've been working primarily with one company called Quarter Mile Films for the last 4 years, and they have a slate of shows. And so that was really occupying a lot of my time. We do shows like Overhaulin' with Chip Foose. We do West Coast Customs. We do Car Crazy with Barry McGuire. We do a whole extreme series for the Travel Channel, Extreme RVs, Extreme Yachts, and of course Flippin' RVs. And so that's been sort of the lion's share of my work has come through that.
All right, so take me through the process a little bit. Someone comes to you and they say, "Hey, we got this show called Flippin' RVs, and we need theme music for the program." I mean, do you try to take the content of what the show is going to be and match it to the music, or do you just create music and know that it's going to work for the show?
Yes and yes. I mean, sometimes the music is written to picture, and sometimes they'll say, "Hey, we want something kind of like this," and then they'll take my musical inspiration and cut images to that. So so it kind of works both ways, and fortunately, my partner is a very musical person, and so he is able to articulate, which a lot of times TV people aren't. They're like, "We want it more green,
right,
more blue or green." You're like, "What does green mean? I don't understand."
So tell me that again.
He's
then
very musical.
They'll present pictures to you, and they'll say, "Write to this picture."
Picture meaning the film. So I'll get a quick time movie, and they'll say, "Here's the opening sequence that we have. It's kind of 18 to 35 male demographic. We want something that's tough but sophisticated. So maybe some orchestral components, but maybe put in some rock stuff underneath." So, you know, there's always a bit of a template for me to look at. before I set out on the task at hand.
That's got to take a certain sort of temperament to do, right? Because I would imagine if you are a creator and a composer of music, you want to write what you think is wonderful, beautiful music, not what's going to appeal to the demographic of your sponsor.
Well, it's a much different dynamic than, yes, of course, than being an artist where you're doing music that, you know, the song is done when you say it's done and what is pleasing to your ears. Right. And when you're working for television and film and other clients, it's not about you. You've got to die to your wants and your needs, and it's all about the customer. So whatever they want, you try to give it to them.
Yeah. Do you ever shelve the stuff that they reject and use it for someone else?
Once in a while things get repurposed, and that's always beautiful because then it's not wasted.
those would be hours down the drain otherwise. Well, listen, do you ever think you will maybe start doing the coffee shops or go back on the road again, or are you pretty much going to be a studio guy for the rest?
Well, I enjoy the live component, and I lead worship at my church on Sunday, and I'm able to kind of keep that muscle limber and strong, and so that's a beautiful part of my week, is that I get to still play live. But as far as actually touring and doing that whole thing, you know, I've got a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. It's just probably not in the cards for me at this point.
And you've already got it in your library of experience, so that's not too bad. Steve Bertrand, nice to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. It's an honor.
Yeah, for a thrill. I hope we stay in touch. That's Steve, but thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Steve Bertrand, another of the Steve Bertrands. There are several. This one's a composer in L.A. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. La, 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 la. Thank you, Steve Alexander. It is 12:52 on the Business Lunch, the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook as well. There are a few pages there. We've got Steve Bertrand on books with Steve Bertrand. Take your choice. Allison Robinson is in the studio. She is the genius behind the Mom Project. Allison, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
very happy to be here and share the Mom Project with you.
Yeah, talk right into the microphone there. So the Mom Project has been up and running for what? Maybe you're coming up on 3 weeks, right?
Exactly. We're in our third week.
Tell me about the project. What is it?
Absolutely. So the Mom Project is a digital talent marketplace. You can find us online at www.themomproject.com. And we connect highly skilled and educated women with great project-based opportunities with great companies.
So the idea is these are women who've left the workplace to raise kids or temporarily, or who are these women we're talking about?
Exactly. So many may have left the workforce already, and some are looking at their current career and don't think that might be the right fit long term. So we're looking for an alternative career structure.
So it's not necessarily people who are out of the workforce right now.
Not all. No.
Right. So we're talking about women. Right?
Most women, but we actually
have. Do you have any dads?
We do,
which
is lovely. We're actually in the process of staffing our first dad in a project, which has been really cool.
So the idea is you're building a database of potential employees, right?
Absolutely.
And this is a time when there's very low unemployment. So people, the job market's pretty tight, so this might be attractive to companies who have a project coming up.
Absolutely. We're seeing that companies are shifting and increasingly looking to less traditional staffing models to be able to resource their organizations more flexibly to meet their business demands in real time. So we're seeing a lot of great interest from the business community.
What sorts of skills are we talking about here?
So we really have an infrastructure to support really any client need. I would say currently we're most developed in marketing, finance, human resources, project management. But mm-hmm. We are seeing a lot of great talent across many different professional verticals.
So if you needed someone to play in a German Oompa band,
exactly,
we've
got someone.
You could do
who's
that.
Who's ready
huh?
and qualified.
So you've been up and running for 2 weeks, 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and it's going like you would have expected?
It's going really, really well, yes.
What does that mean?
We have already got over 2,000 candidates signed up to our platform. Yep. And we've got probably about 60 companies as well. So really the interest has been just incredible.
How do you get 2,000 applicants in 3 weeks in a tight job market?
It's interesting. The power of social media is very, very large. So a lot of it has been word of mouth through social channels.
And these people are drawn to you because they might want to find a new full-time job or just a part-time job? Or
yeah, so really what our talent is looking for is pretty diverse. So we do offer a lot of project-based opportunities. We also have a maternityship program, which is a great opportunity as companies get more generous in their parental leave policies, where our talent can go in and cover for those staffing gaps.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's parents covering for other parents.
So I read about that maternityship, and I thought that was just a clever play on words to help the women get back in the workplace.
Absolutely.
But in a way, it's to help other women get out of the workplace for a while and come back.
Yeah, it helps alleviate some of that tension for those women away, as well as providing a great opportunity to send our talent in to cover for that need.
It seems to me like you've got some pretty big players competing with you. How do you make inroads there?
We actually consider our biggest competitor to be a company's internal stretch. So asking their existing employees to work to cover those needs. So we see a lot of opportunity here.
So you've got 2,000 women and a couple of dads who signed up.
That's right.
You've got 60 companies who mm-hmm. have expressed interest or who are...
Yeah, so we're currently sourcing talent for over 36 projects. So the demand has been phenomenal. So
I don't speak corporate very well. So when you say sourcing talent, does that mean you're looking for fits or you have made fits?
So placing talent on projects.
Okay.
Yep. So we've already completed our first round of project placements. And the demand just continues to come in, which is incredible.
So as the co-founder of the Mom Project, when you place someone to go work on a project, are you tempted to call every day and see how it went?
The great thing about the Mom Project is we want to be in our talent's role in their life longer term, right? Huh. And continue to stay with them. And so, yes, I'm always very eager to go hear how different interviews go and really stay connected with our talent.
How do people find out more information?
They can visit us online, www.themomproject.com.
All right, very well. Allison Robinson, nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You bet. Good luck. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.